So, Michael, the conditions at Bean right now are 1,500 overcast, 5 miles visibility. Hole's not big enough for you here, and that's not enough to go down either one of the valleys. But you fly a day VFR airplane all the time. I mean, there's at some point you would say, yeah, I can go check it out. How high would it have to be for you to be tempted into it?
Well, for me, when I think of Bean and I look at the METAR from the AWOS, it's just a small snapshot. And what you don't know is that the terrain all around it is probably the clouds are touching the hilltops. So yeah, the airport might be fine, but it's trying to get to the airport and have options. So now in my extra, when I'm flying in a situation like that, if there's parts where the clouds are touching the hilltops, I'm done for the day. And that's sort of my go, no go.
I also have a question for Michael in that your extra being high speed as opposed to a Super Cub, which can go a lot slower, does that factor in your decision that it's actually better to be able to go slower in this kind of scenario?
You know, Richard, for me, when I get in a situation like this, I always go from airport to airport to airport on my GPS. And like, okay, it's 3 minutes to that one. It's 3 minutes to that one. It's 8 minutes there. And I like the speed when I'm doing this because I can maneuver quickly, but I can also get out of a situation pretty fast as well. So I'm less apt for the weather to close in behind me or things like that. So I feel very comfortable doing that in my extra, something I probably shouldn't say, but it is, if you're flying around in lowish weather, for me, I love the options of the speed because I can get places quickly.
Mm-hmm. I take this low and good forward visibility and ability to set down in lots of places.
I think this is a good example of what you're used to. Mm-hmm. I'm super comfortable in my extra. I feel when I'm in there and I'm tucked in, it's like it's my security blanket and I can do all the stuff. If I'm in a Cub, I'm not comfortable in that mm-hmm. situation.
Yeah, and there's definitely something to that. So I'm wondering, is there anyone here at the table who would actually go down one of the valleys or spiral down the hole in a Super Cub? Like, I don't know, maybe Hirschman? Maybe you would be thinking that would be something he would do?
My choice on this one was option four, which was go back to Berlin. You got wide open area for descent, and you got, you know, relatively low terrain between Berlin and the destination. So I would think that seems to me like the plan with the best chance of success and the least risk. There is a couple of private strips even between Berlin and the destination. So that one would seem pretty easy to me. And I don't mind the descent itself through a tight space. I think that's okay, but what would scare me about that is that once you're down there, the terrain around it, you may not be able to get out of the sort of bowl that you're in, and you don't have the option of climbing through the clouds or rocketing skyward like Michael was talking about in his extra. You know, so the initial descent in a tight spot is not terribly concerning, but what you find when you get down there could be really concerning.
Well, I'm really concerned about my choice because I'm usually Mr. Conservative here at this table, and Michael, who will fly upside down 3 feet off the ground, is taking a conservative approach, and I'm taking a more aggressive one. Frankly, I like choice two. I would continue on over a Bean and see what the clouds look like there. If it wasn't satisfactory, I'd continue to Sugarloaf, where it at least suspect that it's broken and good visibility and 2,000 feet. I descend through there in a Super Cub that's moving slow and very maneuverable. I can either choose to land there, or if I like the weather, I can proceed down these roads and find my way right back to Bean, to me, with very little risk. Bean is now reporting 1,505. That's good VFR for a slow airplane, for sure. And so that would be my choice. If I saw weather I didn't like anywhere in that scenario, I'd either backtrack and land at Sugarloaf, or if the clouds weren't broken enough there, I'd just return.
Yeah, I agree with Wally, and I've done a lot of this kind of flying in a Super Cub, and I'm with you on the key is visibility. I'm so much more interested in visibility when the weather's low and, quote, scud running than cloud tops. And the notion that you could fly over to Sugarloaf and you could see en route if there are other places to come down, and then fly up that valley kind of around to the north and come back. Looks plenty wide, and it looks like it's got lots of options there for you.
I might actually choose option 2.5, which is kind of a combination of 2 and 3. I don't know if that's against the rules, but my strategy when it comes to flying places is the same as it is for parking. Get to the destination and spiral outwards. So I'm going to go straight to Bean and look for a hole. And if there's not a hole, I like the idea of continuing to Sugarloaf, but I might, instead of continuing straight to Sugarloaf, fly the valley that I might fly down to see what that weather looks like and you know, if it's more scattered or, you know, less overcast or whatever, and kind of evaluate as I fly over the valley if I want to turn around and fly under that to go back down the valley.
I would make a combination of 2 and 5, and 5 is thrown in the towel. You know, Nike has this tagline of just do it. I think I would make up a bumper sticker that says just bag it, because there are certain circumstances where you're kind of pushing and you're edging and you're looking for all these advantages. I'll do this if I do that, when the reality is probably be a lot more relaxing and a lot more effective if you just say, hey, this is not going to work today. But having said that, I'm just making the argument for completely canceling it. I would overfly Bean, and if it would have to look pretty good for me to say, yeah, okay, this looks okay, I'll try this. Because I do not want to get myself in a circumstance beneath an overcast, questionable visibility, weaving up a valley that I might not know very well without the option of climbing up through that overcast, which we don't have in this airplane. And so many accidents happen this way where people try to scud run in conditions that just don't support scud running. These may or may not. And when I'm in a situation like this where something is marginal, I always like to have in the back of my head, you know, I have other things I could rather be doing than this kind of stress, and I'll just come back another day.
You know, this one to me just doesn't seem terribly stressful because you've got open sky, you've got landable places, and the key thing is you've got improving conditions. If conditions were getting worse, this would be very stressful. The idea of being able to land, you know, descend and land VFR, and conditions are improving. If you have to land and wait for a little while, go have a Coke or a hamburger and continue on in a relatively short period of time in good VFR conditions in a plane that's well suited for the terrain.
Not one of the options, but I would agree with what Dave said. I would fly to Carabasset, call my buddy and say, hey, I'm going to wait an hour and see what it's like. And, you know, when it comes to quote, scud running, I tell people when I'm in my extra, 1,500 feet and 10 miles visibility, and I can fly to the moon in the plains, Texas, in the Midwest, where it's flat. I wouldn't say that for up here in the Northeast where I live. It's just a different game. It's the hills that worry me.
And, Michael, you make a good point about in the spiral down. What you have to worry about is if things do go badly and you get disoriented, you won't make your way back from that. So you can't say, well, if things start to go bad, then I'll recover. You won't. Once you get disoriented in a situation like that, you're likely not going to recover.
I agree. The spiral down option is not there for me. I just want to back up to a point that Dave mentioned, which is I think is a good one. The conditions here are stratus clouds with low tops at 4,000 or whatever they are and a ceiling and improving conditions. There's very little chance of any rain showers. This is just a stratus cloud condition. So to me, that improves my belief that I won't encounter unexpected low visibility if I do go under these clouds to move on. But that makes a difference. If it was cumulus type clouds, I think the whole scenario changes because now you could bump into a low visibility shower in those valleys. That'd be really bad.
Right. And the temperature dew point spread is widening. It's not narrowing. So right. that would make me feel pretty good about this.
So when I was a kid, I preface that so I get a little bit of a free pass. But it was 3 or 4 of my buddies in a bunch of pit specials back in the 90s leaving a contest in New Jersey. And we did just that. Hey, let's just get on top of this thing. And it closed in. And now here we are 150 miles away from home back in Loran days before GPS. And, you know, one of the things that happens is every shadow looks like a hole from 25 miles away. So like, that's a hole. It's not a hole. That's a hole. It's not a hole. That's a hole. Not a... Now, we've been above the clouds for 100 miles, 5 of us over a clear blanket. And we were somewhere in Western Massachusetts where we finally found a hole after about an hour. It was every man for himself, and it's poof, 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 all through the hole, and we get out the bottom, and no one knows where each other is, and I have no clue where I am, except I'm on Route 2, and there's cars coming over the hills with the lights on. So it was a pretty dark and dreary day, and it took quite a while for me to figure out which way I was headed, where I was, and how to get there. So I think the lesson is, don't go blasting through the bottom of the hole, because when you get there, you just don't know what you're going to find.
Although, you know, these days, picking right up on that, this pilot had an iPad and knew exactly which lake that was. Like, it's that lake right there. And so we have this kind of, you know, positional awareness. I know where it is, and I can see how few miles I need to go, you know, up this valley. We even have in the resources, you can kind of look at the profile view. Like, well, how high would the hills be and which way would they be on? We have all this information helping sort of tempt us in, you know, and this weather that's improving, okay, tempt us in. We've got a place to go and I can look down that valley, tempting us in. How do you avoid all that?
Well, it's an electronically enhanced sucker hole. So yeah, you know where you are, but you don't have any sense of the basis. So I wouldn't do the spiral down. As far as the weather improving, I'm not trusting of this because the AWOSET beans is not fully functional. So I would want a really good indication that the weather is actually lifting and improving before I committed to this. The option of going over to wait at Sugarloaf is easy because you can go there, sit on the ground, and if it doesn't improve, then you figure out what to do after that.
And I agree with Paul totally. Electronics or automation in an airplane, they should be used to enhance safety, not as a crutch. And just because I know where I am, when I get out at the bottom of the clouds, so that's great. Now I'm in a really bad situation, even though I know where I am. But which way do I come out of the clouds? Where am I? Where are the hills when I get there? All of that stuff. It's like, thanks, Mr. iPad, for getting me here. Now you can't help me get out.
One of the pieces of advice I got very early on in my aviation career was, don't do something that's going to look dumb on the NTSB report. So a lot of times when I'm in a situation like this, I kind of look at my options and just think, well, if I heard about this crash, because inevitably that's maybe what would happen, would I be looking at that pilot's decision thinking, well, that was a really dumb thing to do? And I sort of base some of my decisions that way. Like, I don't want to be that guy that you guys are talking about saying, wow, she really made terrible decisions getting herself into that situation and not getting out.
You know, another factor here is he's full of fuel. So I commend this pilot for taking on a full fuel load, because now you really have a lot of options, including going all the way back if you don't like what you see. And it's just something over time, I think you learn with experience, once you push it too much on fuel, you only have to do that once or twice before you say, I don't want to do that anymore.
I have a friend that he loves to say, does it pass the so what test, right? And spiraling down through a hole just doesn't pass the so what test to me, right?
Right. I'm similar to Ivy. I take it one step further. I try to imagine explaining why I did it to the NTSB investigator, right? And then you can hear how stupid you really sound. Or maybe you're like, you know what? No, that sounds pretty reasonable, actually. I think I can do this. I've talked myself into things at times. So maybe there's potentially a danger in that. I want to throw the temptation gauntlet down and just see if anybody bites on this. What if the airplane had a functional attitude indicator? Or what if the hole was right over the airport? The hole is right over the airport, but it's still a tight hole to spiral down through. Any takers on that? Does it change the situation for anybody, or is it like no way, not at all?
I wouldn't say no way. I've been in a situation like this in an airplane that was fully instrument equipped, and I could and did climb up through the overcast. I had to get a clearance and go somewhere else. If that's an option here, and we're presuming that the pilot has the skills to do it and is current enough to do it, then that spiral down, given the terrain around there, is a little risky, but it may be worth considering as long as you can escape out the top. But if you can't escape out the top by spiraling up, then it's absolute no-go.
I had a really strong sense of deja vu when I was reading this scenario, because I actually had a trip in a Super Cub to this same region in which the weather conditions were kind of similar to what's kind of shockingly similar, really. And I came from Maryland, Super Cub. I was up high, you know, 10,000, 11,000 feet crossing the mountains of Vermont. carried a lot of gas. This thing has, 5 hours of fuel on board. And then stopped at Lebanon for fuel and then continued on to Maine and descended through a hole that was right in the Berlin area and flew up the valley to my destination. And so it's like this doesn't seem far-fetched.
I live in this area. This is very common weather for this area, trying to get in and out of these little airports. So it definitely happens a lot. Definitely happens.
So to answer your question, the attitude indicator wouldn't impact my decision over the lake. But seeing the runway, the holes over the runway, I'd think about that one. I would probably explore that one. If it's right over the runway and I believe that could spiral down and keep the runway environment in sight, I'd probably do that.
Even with the potential for disorientation popping out of the bottom of the clouds and trying to orient yourself to the runway, it's being there close enough. That's enough to sway the balance for you. I see some nods around the table, so I'm curious.
It really ups the temptation level, and I'm not sure if I could resist that temptation or not. I'm sitting here saying, no, that's not a good idea, but I wonder if I was actually sitting in the airplane looking down at that runway, I might think it was a better idea.
If the hole's over the runway and you can keep the runway in sight, I'm with Richard, I would take that bet. Especially given the weather conditions and the improving weather conditions. If I can see it when I'm up in the air and I know that the ceiling is reasonable, I'd feel pretty good about spiraling over the airport.
Okay, now you're in a non-ficky SR-20.
Well, you're not going
over
into
the clouds. Over the top of it.
No,
and
even,
it's potentially icy. You see the hole, would you spiral down through it?
Wait, in a Super Cub?
If you're not in a Super Cub, now you're in a faster airplane.
What?
But an airplane you know really well. Hole over the airport. Think it's big enough for that airplane to spiral down through. But faster airplane, would you do it?
Probably. I probably would. I'm super familiar with the Cirrus. So, I think, like Michael and his extra, I feel like I wear the Cirrus more than I fly the Cirrus. So I'm pretty confident I can maneuver that plane exactly where I need to put it. And I'm going to use the extra technology in there to help my orientation.
And for me, an attitude indicator doesn't help me get down. It only is my escape up. It's not down. You're using your attitude indicator to go through a cloud layer or to try to hope you can get down the bottom. You don't know what's underneath you. It's a recipe for disaster.
And if you can see the runway, first of all, the runway helps with the orientation. And then the concern about the spiral down was what happens if you have to go back up. And, if the runway is in sight, then chances are really good that you won't have to go back up.
Well, the problem with that is you don't really know the size of the hole. So that runway, that hole could be a little more than a runway. So you have to maneuver yourself around the clouds and be able to make the approach to the runway that's reasonably safe. And that goes to Ivy's point, or your point, I guess, Jeff, about in a faster airplane. No, I wouldn't do it in a faster airplane. The Cub, you can really back it off and slow it down to about 60 knots and turn it tight. But if I were flying a Mooney or a Cirrus or something, you can do that, but I think it's just a lot more challenging.
And maybe that's kind of the takeaway from this whole thing here is when I'm listening to people's answers around the table, it's on this long spectrum. Like, well, if it was a little bit bigger, or if I was in this airplane that, I wear like a coat because I know it all the time, I might do it faster, says Michael, because that's what I'm comfortable with. Dave's like, no, I'm slowing down in the Super Cub. You fly a lot in the Super Cub. And it's interesting to me how the reasonable temptation is there in the things that you're very comfortable with. But then there's kind of the downside of it, like Michael pointed out about, oh, thanks, Mr. iPad. I knew exactly where I was to be able to call after I crashed because I got suckered in the high-tech sucker hole or the suckered in from the airplane that I'm so familiar with that I felt more like I could do this. And that overrode a sort of natural, is this really the right thing to do? Or do I just need to wait it out a little while? And let things develop that might be just maybe a little bit better.